Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to your favorite podcast that asks all the difficult question and hopefully hurts feelings along the way. This is Woodworking is Bullshit. I'm your host, Paul Jasper, scientist by day, woodworker by night, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts. First off, Emmy Award winner Eric Curtis and furniture and cabinet making cover model Mary Sy.
Not inaccurate.
Oh, what a great, you two, like, what great things you guys are doing, honestly, really. It's always fun to, like, think of something every week to, like, feature the two of you. Sometimes they're embarrassing.
Easily your best intro, hands down.
Sometimes they're embarrassing, sometimes they're praisatory. Well, this week we have a special guest, and that special guest is Keith Johnson, KJ Sawdust. We asked Keith to be on the show for several reasons. First of all, because we love Keith. I mean, and when I say love Keith, I mean, Eric, come on now, admit it. When I say we love Keith, I mean, the three of us love Keith. We care about this guy. He's amazing. He's an amazing friend. He's an amazing woodworker. And in addition to our communal love of Keith,
he's just so gosh darn good looking.
That too.
It's definitely hot in here.
A little bit.
Get a little high. Bit.
It's my hamster like complexion, though. Shaved hamster like complexion.
Keith, that blue light in your studio does you no favors with that.
It's transparent with that light.
My blood type is mashed potato. It's very, very white.
Keith, that is not a scientific blood type. I'm sorry.
Are you sure?
Okay. So, you know, the reason we asked Keith to be on the show today, this is not your typical Keith Johnson interview type of guest podcast. We asked Keith to be on the show because we think he can speak uniquely and directly to the question that we have today. So let me start with a question and let me say why, you know, we think why we invited Keith specifically. So as you know, we start with a question. Today's question is, drum roll, how to find your own artistic voice. So that's actually a quite difficult topic because I think a lot of us struggle with it. I think everyone struggles with it at some point. Sure. I know. Now, some people find it eventually. They probably don't feel like they find it, but they do. And, you know, life is, you know, okay. But, you know, I think most of us are in the struggle. And so we thought this would be a good episode to talk about, well, how do we find our artistic voice? What is the struggle? What are the roadblocks and the difficulties? And we thought Keith could speak directly to this topic, as of course the rest of us can as well. But, you know, Keith, you know, we've known Keith a long time and we've watched him, and he's definitely, you know, well on his path of finding his artistic voice. And I think he's in the middle of it. I don't know that he's done. Certainly not. I don't know that any of us are ever done, but certainly Keith's in the middle of it. And we thought Keith could speak directly to this topic. So Keith, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Mary?
Yeah, can we define what artistic voice means first?
Okay, so great question. So I think there's two avenues to define artistic voice that I was thinking about prior to the show. One way was, are you talking about a visual aesthetic voice? Like, I like plaid, I like patterns, I like dark woods, I like clean lines. Or are you thinking along the lines of a conceptual or an idea voice? Like, I like challenging dogma. I like to make people think about this topic. I like to make people question things about their own reality. So let's start by saying there's probably two paths. Like, one's a more visual aesthetic path and one's, I guess, like a little bit maybe more difficult to pin down conceptual path. Okay. So with that, we thought maybe we start with the beginning. So I would ask the listeners to think for a minute, like, how do you begin to start to find your artistic voice? Where do you even start? And I can speak to how I started later in the episode, but you know, I just want you to take a moment to think, you know, have you started? How did you start? Or have you yet to start? And now I'll ask Keith and say, Keith, you know, how did you start and what difficulties did that give way to shortly after you started?
So, I mean, I've been kind of woodworking for 30 years or so, started in seventh or eighth grade. And back then it was, you were assigned projects. It wasn't like, hey, come up with something and go build it. So we were almost given our artistic journey back then. It was like, this is what you're going to build and here are the plans for it. So when I was younger, you know, there was no such thing as the internet, cable TV. So I watched New Yankee Workshop all the time. Yes, I know. I'm quite older than you guys.
Back in the days, we had three channels, children.
I literally had to walk 2 miles in the snow to the bus stop. That's not folklore.
Tuna fish cans on the feet.
So because I lived in New England, in Boston, PBS was always on. So New Yankee Workshop, right? Which Norm is an amazing craftsman. I learned a ton from him, but his furniture style wasn't really anything extraordinary or something that you'd step back and say, wow, that's an amazing piece. It was just basic furniture. Nice, but simple. Shaker style, things like that. And as I started to want to learn more and how to become a better woodworker, you know, I started working for a contractor, which again, you're not going to find an artistic voice working, doing siding and replacing roofs and laying flooring and installing windows. So I started building a little bit of furniture on the side. Nothing, again, my influences were construction and television, which was simple designs. So back then I really liked, and I still do, I'm a big fan of cabinetry. I love kitchen cabinets, looking at the cabinetry, the clean lines, and because you can really screw up a kitchen cabinet if it's not done correctly with proportions and rails and styles and all these things. So as I started to build more of that stuff on my own, I really thought that was it for me. Like, this is where it's going to end. Like, I had picked up issues of Fine Woodworking magazine, and I would look at everything in there and say, there is absolutely no way I could ever build anything in here. And everything I like to do is paint grade. So what's the point in even looking at this magazine? So even as I got after college and was kind of building my own shop in my mother's basement at the time, I was still doing cabinetry and painted things. And that's just kind of was my comfort zone. And because I didn't have any other influences. Like now with social media and meeting friends like you who have the creativity, like beyond what I can even imagine, like there's so many more influences out there. And I didn't really start finding my artistic voice or where I wanted to go with my furniture until Instagram about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. And I saw what other people were building. And I was kind of blown away. I was like, holy cow, what? I need to start doing something better than building boxes and doing built-ins. Because I got to the point where I was, you know, you can always get better, but I had really kind of maxed out on how rewarding things were and how creative I was getting. So as I started to see what other people were making, number one, it was very intimidating. Because I'm like, geez, my brain just doesn't work that way. How am I going to come up with these designs? Like, some of them look simple at first glance. So I'm like, why am I not coming up with these ideas of blending these different mediums and different shapes together? And it's because my background was in boxes and squares and rectilinear things. So it has been over the last 5 or 6, 7 years. And as you know, Paul and you guys, we've become better friends. You've probably seen me like completely shift away from things. And a lot of it is because of the influence from you guys. And, you know, I don't like to look at things and just copy them. I think it's not a cop out, but, you know, we want to be original. Like if, and we all want to be original in what we present to people. So someone doesn't say, oh yeah, I've already seen that. You ripped that off from somebody else. And it's very difficult because I know you guys have talked before, like everything's already been done, which maybe, but there's still plenty of things I see that are quite original and that I've never seen before. And just building off of other things that already exist. And, you know, the term make it your own, which I think is still a very rewarding thing and very possible, because you can take the smallest idea from someone else and just completely go off on your own and give your own spin to it.
So how do you go about doing that, Keith? Like how, like if you're saying that you don't think you're naturally creative, which I identify with, I don't think that my brain naturally works that way. I think it was a skill that I had to learn, but you're developing that skill currently, right? Mm-hmm. How do you take that seed of an idea and transform it, transfigurate it into something that is unique?
Well, Eric, that gets into the solutions to the problem. We haven't even fully fleshed
out. Getting greedy. He's like, you know, I love Keith.
Sorry, I got to put the brakes on that.
He's a dear friend of mine. So I'm curious to hear.
All right. So I promise we'll get to his answer on how he handled that. But before that, I want to ask all of you, Eric, Mary, Keith, you know, can you tell me what you feel like was your biggest obstacle or struggle with finding your artistic voice? So Keith, since you started, why don't you say what your, you know, number one most difficult struggle has been?
It's coming up with the initial design, not the project I want to build. Like, hey, I need a coffee table. I want to build a coffee table, but I want it to be the badassest coffee table around. And, you know, I'm not an artist. My sketches look like my freaking cat did them. And even if I come up with a rough sketch that has even the remotest limited legibility, I don't have the brain power to come up with 10 other iterations to keep refining that design. And this is why I make prototypes a lot. And, you know, Mary, I know, has spoken to this too. Like, I only have limited time in the shop, even though now it's my full-time job. I have plenty of time out there, but I don't want to spend all this time building something and at the end go, well, that sucks. I really wish I had spent more time initially refining the details before coming out here and wasting all this labor and lumber.
See, I've got no problem at this point in my life making a piece of shit.
Me too.
Eric, I am with you.
I think Keith, like, it feels to me emotionally like you are the perfect in between to me and Mary. I know Mary likes to iterate, and I know you can talk about your process in a second, but I can't iterate because I'm not capable enough as an artist to make all of these renderings, to draw 7 different ideas. They have to live in this kind of purgatorial existence for a while. I come up with a concept, I come up with an idea, and it has to just iterate in my brain until I see the form in my head in this kind of ethereal thing that I go like, that's the idea I can play off of. And then I go do the best thing, the best version of that I can. And that's why I'm okay with it being a piece of shit in the end, if that's what it ends up being, because I'm like, I did my damnedest attempt at that. But for me, Paul, to answer your question, I think it's finding the concept or the direction, the initial idea that pushes me forward into excitement. It's that struggle of like, I know the thing that I want to express, and especially early on, I didn't know how to identify what was good from what was bad. Like, what's a good idea? What's a bad idea? What will work and what won't work? I didn't have the tools or the skill set to identify those things. So that was the biggest struggle. And at this point, I have that skill set. So it's that long, sometimes very aggravating process of like seeing the thing in my brain and going, that's not the right idea yet. And then just waiting and being patient enough to stumble upon the idea and go, ah, there it is. Okay, now I'm going to go forward.
Yeah.
That's a frustrating process sometimes, because it can take hours, days. Sometimes it takes weeks and months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think.
Mary, how about you?
For me, like, I mean, I risk sounding a little arrogant, but like, I can usually tell when something's a good idea or a bad idea. However, my biggest obstacle is making sure it is living up to my own standards. So yeah, I'm often like iterating and just saying, it's not good enough. And like Keith said, like, I don't want to build something unless I am really happy with it, because I don't have enough time in my life to you know, make things that I'm not happy with. And that's been the biggest issue. So I can get stuck in a cycle of just keep redesigning and redesigning. And that's when I do need people like Eric to tell me, just like, go start making things, or like start modeling like little prototypes or whatever. And that helps kick me out of the cycle sometimes. But yeah, overall, that's been my biggest obstacle, I think.
It's okay. And Paul, I want to hear your process too. But I just want to say, for all of the people out there who are like Mary, it's okay to make a mediocre object. Like, that's totally, totally fine.
Yes, yep. I know that. And I've been doing it lately just because I like have to get in the shop and do something. But it's just hard for me to accept.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Paul, so what are your hurdles?
My biggest struggle to design is that I have to, well, either Eric, like you, I just don't have the nugget to start it. But then when I find the nugget, it all rolls. So sometimes it's like searching for the nucleation point that like starts everything, right? And the other thing I struggle with is like, I have so many ideas that come so quick. What did you say?
I said they're scientist.
Nucleation.
This is a perfect juxtaposition of our educational background. Point, and I hit purgatorial. Like, this too.
Okay, fine. That nugget to start the thing. Anyway, it's either that, or it's like I get the ideas start coming so fast, and then I'm like, fuck, who's going to build it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to build all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, goddamn, because it's going to take me the next month. Mm-hmm. I want to see how it turns out because it's an exploration. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to build everything myself. I want like a little elf out there who can just like, I'm just like, talk to the elf. Hey, Dobby, go make that shit. All right.
Hey, Dobby is a free elf at this point. You know, whatever the fuck you want, okay?
He's a union guy, actually. So you have to talk to the shop steward.
He's got a living wage these days.
Okay. They're all in a union.
All right. So, now that Dobby's a free elf, I've thought about some other obstacles and struggles, and I want to list them. I like categorizing and lists and kind of condensing things into like frameworks that we can think about. So I have like five other struggles and obstacles that I think maybe our listeners can relate to. And I want your react. Let me read the five of them, and then we can like, you can pick and choose which one you want to react to. Wow. Cause I think they're all worthy of reaction. Number one, I just have no original ideas. It's all been done before. Everything I think about is just like something that's been done before. Or ideas just don't come to me. Like, it's just like a blank piece of paper and nothing comes. All right. So that's like one. Two, I have self-doubt and imposter syndrome. Like, even if I design something, it's probably stupid. People think it's dumb. I probably don't deserve, you know, I don't belong in this community of like really heavy duty artists. They're all so much better than me. And that leads to like, that feeds into like fear of failure and perfectionism. And the perfectionism then leads into procrastination because you don't want to start, or over preparation where you're trying to like safeguard yourself against criticism, right? By over, Mary, why are you smiling?
Because I feel Eric's glaring eyes on me.
Mary, maybe you could speak to that after I'm done listing. That's number two. Number three, lack of interest in general, or lack. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, I don't want to make my own stuff. I don't give a shit. Like, I've heard people say that. And I think, you know, that may be that truly is not your interest, or it's just a lack of fluency and a lack of training. Because I think if you were to have those tendrils of excitement and interest, you know, touch you, you would be interested. Number four, this is contributed by Keith. I tend to waffle. I have too many ideas and I go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and I can't make a decision. I just can't commit. I just get like analysis paralysis, dizzied by the array of different possibilities. And number five, there exists a significant gap between your skills, what you're capable of making, and what you see in your head. So you're like, shit, what do I do now? Okay. So those are the five. That was no original ideas, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, lack of interest, I waffle, there's too many options, or a gap between your skills and vision. Who would like to comment first?
So early on, when I was in school, I had no experience designing. And looking back at my sketchbook from those days, it's very clear that I was just pulling whatever influences I could, right? Just the most basic stuff, just not interesting stuff. But I go back and I thumb through it every now and again. And there's like two or three really interesting ideas in there. And they're conceptual. They're the seeds of a conceptual idea. They're not even fully conceptual ideas. And it's a clear example of the last point that you made of, I had this thought and I was like, that would be really cool, but I had no idea how I could actually execute it. So I just put it out of my brain. And it's one of those things that's been percolating. Like, since I've gone back and seen it again, I've been percolating on it for like 12 years. I'm like, one day, but that day is not this day. And the clearest example of that in that sketchbook to me is I had this idea of like, think of like a stick figure man kind of like sitting on his butt with like his elbows on his knees kind of thing. And that was a chair in and of itself. So it's like a man sitting is the thing you're sitting on. And it just like
he's spooning you?
He's spooning.
Spoon man. There you go.
And it's a clear example of like, I had this thing that like, it's got layers, obviously, you know, you're spooning a man sitting. But I couldn't build that back then. And it might not even be interesting, but the idea, the thought that I had that at a point where I didn't have the technical skill to know how to execute it, that's always interested me. And I'm curious to see, like, part of my process is I can't really keep a notebook because, like I mentioned earlier, I'm not a skilled enough illustrator of my ideas to really jot them down in a coherent way.
So I feel like you're selling yourself a little short. I've seen your notebook. You're a very, very good artist.
I'm a tradesman artist at best. And I don't mean that to be derogatory towards tradesmen. I mean, like, I don't have an art education or background. But I a little bit regret the fact that I don't have that paper trail, because I'd be curious to look back in another 10 years and find out, like, what are the ideas that I have now that I'm not technically competent enough to build?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. you guys can probably guess what mine is. but I most identify by far with the second point of self-doubt, imposter syndrome. I mean, I'm a designer during the day and at night as well, and it is what I live and breathe for the past decade or so, and every day still struggle with imposter syndrome. It's just, I don't know. It's like that is honestly probably the biggest obstacle. Just like, it can be self-crippling at a certain point. You kind of have to get over it. And as I get older, obviously, it is getting better. I've learned to deal with it and acknowledge it more as opposed to letting it control me. And a lot of what helps is actually reaching out to friends and understanding like your perspective and your voice as a designer. And I want to say like validation helps, but that's not the only thing. Like, it's not validation from others. Although I will say that is actually important. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can't rely on that as your only sense of validation, but from yourself too, just having the confidence to say, yes, I do actually think I know what I'm talking about. I think that I'm experienced enough and have made enough good pieces that I feel confident in this design. So it's a learning curve. I'm still dealing with it every day, but imposter syndrome is something that I think most people can relate to, especially as they see these like kind of intimidating pieces on social media or things that you wish that you could make, but you're just like, I have no idea how they even came up with that. And I guarantee you, those same people struggled the same pathway too. Like, mm-hmm. It's all a process.
Geez. Well, very well said, Mary. And, you know, because I love to have some research always. I actually looked up if there was research on imposter syndrome. And in fact, the research is actually in its like infancy, because it's not recognized as a diagnosable thing yet. And people are making a case that it should be diagnosed as a thing,
Does imposter syndrome have imposter syndrome?
If that's not the title of this episode, I'm winning the podcast.
Mary with the zinger. So, Mary, you might be interested to hear some of the statistics on this. That do you guys want to guess what percent of people identify in the general population as having imposter syndrome? Keith, you first.
I mean, I'd say around 50%.
Eric? Oh,
I'm going to say 35%.
Mary?
60?
Between 60 and 80%.
That's bullshit. I don't believe it.
You're in the 20%.
Eric, that's the beautiful thing about
losers.
That's the beautiful thing about data.
The numbers, Eric, don't lie.
That's the beautiful thing about data. It doesn't give a shit about your opinion. So,
you're the one causing the imposter syndrome.
Neither does Mary, so here we are.
Second of all, does it happen more in men or women? Keith?
Oh, I think that's women.
Eric?
I would agree, but I don't want to get canceled.
Mary? Too late. Mary?
Well, we'll only cancel Keith. It's fine.
Mary?
I would agree. I would say women.
It's 50-50.
Oh.
Sorry.
That's the right answer. That's what I should have said.
I think the women are just more forthcoming about their feelings because men are emotionally stunted. Okay, next.
Yeah, that's part of our charm, Paul.
Yeah. Does it improve with age or not? Keith?
Yes.
Ooh. I would say like what improves with age is not giving a crap. So yeah, I would probably say
Eric's a yes.
Age, yes. Yep.
Mary?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it kind of depends. Like if you switch careers super late in life, then I could see it, you know, surging again. But yeah, I would say overall you're more confident in your experience in life.
All right. I agree with that anecdotally, although you're not going to like the answer. Some studies say yes. Some studies say no. It's kind of not, it's not clear what the conclusion is about that. Two more points. It's more frequent in ethnic minorities. And it's often related to the parenting style of your parents.
Sure.
Surprising.
That's not surprising.
What is the parenting style that encourages?
It's often related to either abuse in some form, either physical or mental, or extreme criticism.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mary's smiling again.
I think we're getting to the bottom of Mary's problems here. Okay.
She's trying to do a therapy session all the time.
Mary, why don't you lay on the couch there and we'll really delve deep into this.
I can pull down.
Not
the,
what I meant. That was not a metaphor, religious. By the way.
All right. So, Eric, you've talked about the gap between skills and vision. Mary, you've talked about self-doubt and imposter syndrome. Keith, you know, you had no original ideas come to me, right? They just don't. I don't know. They're just not there. I guess I would say it's a little bit of ideas just don't come to me, and it's a bit about gap between skills and vision. Like, I want to draw beautiful things. I want to draw like photorealistic shaded shit. I don't have the skills. I don't know if I just can never get them, or it's just I don't have them now. But it frustrates me so much because there's things I want to put on wood. Yeah, that's like stuff and I can't pull it off yet. And I fail. I've tried to draw a dragon like 15 times and they all look like they've been like drinking too much on a street corner. They're like, it's terrible.
This is an audio format, Paul. You don't have to talk about the way I look right now. It's really unfortunate. Right,
so without criticizing Eric more, I would like to talk about what are some of the solutions now? I think hopefully the listeners, you know, I'm sure many of you have relate to or identify with some of those struggles about design. So let's talk about solutions. So Keith, let's start with what your solutions have been to finding your way with your struggle of, I don't see things. It just doesn't come to me. What have you found for your solutions?
I think in the beginning, a lot of it was copying, meaning I built a lot of furniture out of Norm Abram's book. Like, he had the plans, so I built them just to get me more into joinery and you know, glue ups, all these things, the actual building of furniture and how it should be built and wood movement. And once you go from there, then it becomes, you know, we talked about this before, Paul, like a pebble in a still lake where it starts to ripple out. So then you see something in the next ripple. Oh, I like that little detail. And then the next ripple, oh, I see something over there. And then you just start gathering these little things that you like and want to incorporate into something else that you build. But beyond, then you got, then it's like the next step where you got to be original and come up with something of your own. And that's, I mean, I turn to the internet. I mean, Pinterest, I use Pinterest a lot for ideas, and Instagram, and, you know, dare I say, an AI generator where you have something in your head like, all right, I want to build a coffee table with curves and a hidden drawer. You can enter that and then get a bunch of renderings. Most of them will be like crazy fantasy builds that will never be able to happen, but it could give you just one little idea that you could incorporate into your piece. You know, even at this stage of my career, I love taking classes. Took one last year with Eric and Larissa. I just signed up for another one at CFC in the fall, which I'm super stoked about.
Which one?
Curvature with Yuri Kobayashi.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Oh my God. I'm so jealous. Oh my God.
For those of you waitlisted, but got off it today.
Those of you who don't know who Yuri is, pause the podcast, go Google Yuri, and then immediately sign up for any class that you can ever have with her, because she's one of the best teachers and kindest human beings I've ever known in my life.
And her work is insane.
She's also the baddest bitch in woodworking, for sure.
So yeah, classes, and yeah, I can't wait. I'm super excited. Take a class. Collaborate with a friend. Like, hey, let's go build something together, because you may have different ideas. You know, Paul and I are... We're 2.5 years into this build of two whiskey cabinets, which will be completed this weekend. But
I don't believe because,
you know, aside, but Paul and I spent, oh gosh, how many hours on the phone? We had an initial idea, right? And then we just kept refining it and coming up, oh, that won't work. What about this? That won't work. What about this? And just kept refining and coming up with different design ideas. But that also is what you just said, Paul. Like, you wish you had someone you could build all this stuff for you and you didn't have to. And, you know, I'm not going to go off on a tangent here because I know you don't like that. But that's where the CNC for you, like, changed the way you work, because you didn't have to do it by hand anymore. You could hammer out an idea and, like, that sucks, throw it off to the side, throw it in the burn pile, and you spent no labor on it.
Well, to be fair, you did the shell of the whiskey cabinet, so you were my little elf.
Right.
But this is a point that I wanted to bring up earlier. Like, this is the Wendell Castle realm, right? Like, you're talking about a guy who has innumerable ideas and is built a career off of sculptural forms and got to a point where he didn't have the capacity to build the ideas that he had in his brain anymore because of age and the number of clients he had coming in. So he was one of the first guys in sculpture / woodworking to incorporate a 5-axis CNC, and people were all kinds of butthurt about it. And yet, like, he's one of the most prominent and influential furniture makers of the 20th century.
Eric, that is an amazing lead in to what I was going to say. That is like, I couldn't have scripted it better. Right. Okay. So first of all, Keith, you said, you know, I'm missing that starting nugget of an idea. All right. So I provided in our collaboration of the Stadia Whiskey Cabinet, I provided that through my, what do you call it? Obsession with the stadium shape and about curves. Are, you know, do humans prefer curves? And it all started with a question. And we've talked about this in a previous episode. So that starts to get at my answer for how you solve the problem, or how I solved the problem, which was develop a sense of curiosity. And you, some of you have it like well developed, and some of you, you know, have some curiosity, but like it's actually a skill. I don't think you either have it or you don't. I actually think it's a skill, curiosity. So do you allow yourself to go down rabbit holes? Do you ask? Do you allow yourself to ask dumb questions? I felt like it was a dumb question. Do humans prefer curves or straight lines? Like, it seems so stupid when I originally asked it, but in fact, the answer is anything but stupid. Make room in your brain. Give your life time to consider things. And this comes to one of our previous episode, which is creativity and boredom. Do you give yourself the mental space to go down rabbit holes? So I think all of that feeds into this idea of curiosity, and curiosity leads to questions, and the answer to those questions leads you down a path, a journey through your making and through your art. And that's what I like to call, and Eric was already talking about this, like a theoretical underpinning. You see many artists who have a theoretical underpinning, like a thread that moves longitudinally through all of their work. So for, I have a few examples in mind, which is like Jeff Koons, you know, he makes those, the balloon stuffed animal, many things. Like he's made many things, but example, he did this, Eric, I know Eric, I'm going to unleash you after I finish this. So he made the Gazing Paul paintings where he took like the Mona Lisa, he replicated it 3 times the scale and put a gazing ball in front of it. And, you know, from a first glance, you're like, what the hell is that? He just copied the Mona Lisa and put a stupid sphere in front of it. But when you hear him talk about his theoretical underpinning, he's a little bit of a salesman. He's kind of full of shit, but at the same time,
that's a skill. And that is a skill.
At the same time, what he says is, I wanted to draw the observer into the work and make it a collaborative art piece where they are part of it. So they have to see themselves within the context of the artwork. Okay. Takashi Murakami, one of my favorites, his theoretical underpinning was something called superflat, where he took 2D art from ancient Japan and reimagined it. And he also says, you know, why are we distinguishing high art from low art, meaning like anime is like, you know, I think that was considered or commercial art, low art, as opposed to fine art. Like, why are we giving these different levels? Why don't we just flatten it all and just say it's art? And then there's like Mark Rothko, who I think many of you know, he made these paintings that were just like colored squares. And you see them and you're like, why did that sell for $50 million? And you're like, maybe it was 80. I don't know. He makes these colored squares and you think, what the hell is he doing? Like, what is this? Right. And then you read more about his theoretical underpinning, and he was trying to elicit different emotions by looking at colors. That was the theoretical underpinning. So my point is, curiosity leads to exploration and leads to you going down these lines of theoretical underpinnings that's then put a common thread through all of your work. And that has been my solution. I find myself very drawn to questions because as a scientist, I think that's just how my brain is wired. And so I go down rabbit holes without even trying. And next thing I know, I'm trying ideas in the shop that happened out of that. Eric, I promise to set you loose.
I appreciate that, but I actually want to go last because you two hit on a common theme that I want to see if Mary touches on, because that was the first thing that pops into my head.
Mary, what's your solution to some of the difficulties we raised?
My solution, I mean, there's a few, but the one that I know is really reliable is, Eric can attest, I'm not usually someone who asks for help often, but I have found that talking to friends or talking to people who inspire me or people who know me really well has helped me kind of get out of that cycle of self-doubt. It's not what I rely on as like the solution to get me out of that, but I think that it does help, especially like whenever I ask Eric, like, oh yeah, I did some of these sketches, like, what do you think? He can usually tell, like, this one speaks more to you, like to who you are as a designer. And I think that is really nice to hear. So that's one solution. There's quite a few, but I think that one is something that I do rely on quite a bit.
So what I've heard, and the first solution that popped into my head was time, right? Full stop, just time. Give yourself time and space, but mostly time.
To grow.
And you just touched on that. And the time to have conversation and to ask questions, to explore, is something that when you're working on commission, say, let's just from my own personal experience, that most people are not afforded the time to ask those questions and to figure out a solution. They just got to build a goddamn box, right? Build a cabinet. And Paul, you were talking about that same, like, be curious. The curiosity is so goddamn inefficient. It, like, you're just meandering down aimless paths and you might come up to a dead end and then you got to backtrack and figure out where the fuck you're going next. That's super inefficient. And Keith, you were talking about copying and growing from learning how to do a thing that somebody else did and then iterating that into new things in the future, right? Like that's a time scale that we're not even comprehending because we live in an age of like, well, you got to turn it over and make a profit. Like you don't get, you know, iterations? Are you fucking kidding me? You don't get time to do iterations. So like for me, in the development of skill to achieve the idea that I have in my head that I don't yet have the capacity to make is an issue of time. It's an issue of allowing myself to make other objects before I make that object, because I don't have the technical capacity to make that thing, or to remember that, like, the thing that I'm developing in my head that's percolating, that's brewing, that's growing is not ready yet. So I've got a client right now who has been immensely patient, but, and I literally have my notes up from our meeting on May 10th, 2023. So it's coming up on what, 10 months it's been since we had our initial meeting. And I literally this week sent them an email that was like, hey, I'm ready to start thinking about it.
Start thinking.
Because it's just, I knew that I didn't have the time and the space to consider what I wanted this object to look like. And then I broke out the books today and I was looking through them and I was thumbing through them and I saw some visuals. I was like, that's an interesting thing. How am I going to combine these elements? And I start pulling just elements of a design. And then it's going to take time. Like, literally, after this call, I'm going to look at the weather and see what the weather's doing this week. And I'm going to go find time to go meander through the woods for 4 hours and just sit with the thing and see if it's an idea that can develop. Because that time is crucial to overcoming, I think, all of the things we're talking about, because every one of you hit on some element of time.
Oh, how long does it take you to kind of, on average, I guess, to come up with an idea that you feel ready to make?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. It depends on the idea. If somebody's asking me to develop an idea, it's going to take a while. Like, the last few commissions have been in the 8 to 12 month range.
Okay.
But also, in fairness, it's a thing that I like set aside until I know that I have the time to sit with it. And if I had to do it in a period of time, I could probably do it in a week, like, of intense, like, study, research, thinking about it, developing it, allow it time to develop, and then get it to a point where I'm comfortable at least moving forward with a concept.
Do you think that if it was that week one versus like the 8 to 12 months one, do you think that one's a weaker design or no?
Not necessarily. I think it's kind of a crapshoot. But the more time that it has to develop, either mentally or physically, I think the higher likelihood of a better result.
Gotcha. That's interesting, because like, I have like, not the opposite, but I don't have the pressure of having to be in time constraints, because this is not my full-time job. So then I'm just like, let me just keep iterating, because I have all that time to think about it. And then I like I said, it just starts to cycle again, and then I overthink things, and that's when you tell me just like, make something, Mary.
And then... just cut wood.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, yeah, time can also be a vicious partner too.
These are excellent points about time. I didn't even occur to me. Thank you. That's awesome. I'm totally going to think about that moving forward. So I'm going to give one answer that I think we'll all agree on as a solution, which is put in the work.
Yeah.
That means like iterate, explore, do trial and error. The more pieces you make, the more you'll figure out what works from a design point of view. You have to iterate. And I would just say, make a lot of fucking art. Just do it. Just make a lot. You'll figure out if it sucks. You'll figure out if you like it. You'll figure out if you hate it. I think putting in the work is everything. So I know, Mary, I know all of us are chomping at the bit to explain it. Right? So I'll keep mine brief. I'll say, I started Copper Pig when I wanted to, about 8 years ago, when I wanted to find my design voice. And I said, I can't make furniture that takes 300 or 400 hours each piece. I need to make smalls, because I'll never make enough pieces to figure out what I like and what I don't like. That's why I make smalls. I used to make big furniture, but it's because I knew I needed to iterate. And Mary, I know you go through hundreds and hundreds of sketches. That's you iterating. Like, yeah. I mean, you may not be iterating in making it in the real world, because you don't have that, you know, that time, because of, you know, me too, like, because of our jobs. But that's iterating, and that's putting in the time. Eric, go ahead.
So I want to draw a parallel, because at this point, I get accused by Mary a lot of being very confident. Fair. But I've also been doing this thing professionally for 12 years. I've known I've wanted to be a furniture maker for 15, 16, 17 years, something like that. But the thing that I decided last year, and Paul, you said smalls, and this is like, it's a volume game, right? So I want to draw a parallel to YouTube, and I'll keep this as brief as I can, because I decided to put out a video every week for when I made the business decision to take on YouTube, because I needed the data, I needed the feedback, I needed the raw information to tell me what was working and what wasn't working, what I was good at and what I wasn't good at, and what would separate me from other people. And I think I'm doing okay. I think it's successful. Insofar as it can be successful after a year and 3 months. However, there was a recent conversation that Mary and I had where I had a real like bout of imposter syndrome. Like, am I good at this thing? Am I too verbose? Do I just say too much bullshit? Am I making interesting videos? And like, the answer is yes, because obviously, But it's a real thing. I think the more I've thought about it, the more I think it's just the awkward teenage years of any creative endeavor, right? It's the new beginning. When you are a child, you are not self-aware enough to know that you're not good at a thing. Mm-hmm. And then you at some point gain enough experience to know, I'm not bad, but I'm not good. And then this is where this imposter syndrome sits for a long period. And it takes so fucking long to get to the point where you're actually good that you don't feel that self-consciousness anymore. And I've been doing furniture and woodworking and sculpture long enough where I don't give a shit if I make something mediocre because my overall body of work is strong. With YouTube, every now and again, most of the time it's fine, but every now and again, like that knife just twists the wrong way. And then you just wince and you're like, I don't know how to process this because it's a different creative endeavor that I don't have enough experience in yet.
Keith?
Yeah, the YouTube thing is a totally different animal because you could be the most talented and creative person, but if you can't find your audience or if you don't know how to play the game, meaning thumbnails, titles, getting people to click, it doesn't matter. And that's the unfortunate part about this. I stress more about the goddamn thumbnail and title than I do about the whole build. It's not, I'm not even kidding.
I know. Yeah. You sent me the thumbnail from your latest video. And I'm like, why is he sending me the thumbnail? I'm just like, pick a fucking thumbnail. Like, what's the big deal here?
Well, you spend all this time, number one, building, filming, editing, and then you roll over a piece of shit that nobody wants, like a thumbnail that nobody wants to click on. What was it all for? Yeah, you made money on the commission, but maybe you got a sponsor and the video performed horribly. They're not coming back. Mm-hmm. So that thumbnail and title is sometimes the key to everything, and it sucks. And it's
Keith,
stressful.
You better have a fucking good thumbnail for our whiskey cabinet. That's all I'm saying right now.
Dude, I've been thinking and thinking and thinking because there's so many different ways you can go. I mean, we're not here to talk about YouTube. Eric knows.
Mitch,
like
after delaying me for 2 years on that whiskey cabinet, that thumbnail and title better be amazing, okay?
Yeah,
so much pressure now.
I know, right?
Really, there is
the guy who's not going to do anything for the thumbnail and title.
All right. Well,
No, you already answered. Just kidding. Wrap it up.
Have another martini, Eric. Okay, so with that. I hope that you, so we're going to switch to our next segment, which is lightning round, and I'll explain that in a second, but wrapping up on the finding your artistic voice, this is a difficult and circuitous path through your brain and through your confidence and through your ego, and we all pave a different path, and I love how different everyone's answers were and how honest everyone was. Mary, kudos to you for about like the self-doubt. You're leading that conversation. That's a very difficult conversation. I admire you greatly for leading that because I think a lot of our listeners will be like, yes, I feel that like, I feel you, girl. And, you know, so I think.
Hashtag me too, buddy. You better be careful out here.
And all of us know, all of us feel that. I mean, all of us have felt self-doubt at one point or another. And there's no straight line to the answer. I think it depends on you and your experience and your upbringing, your tendencies, your abilities. All right. So with that, we'll wrap up our segment on that and we'll go to lightning round. So what is lightning round? Well, Mary hates this segment. So it's That's basically, my life. I ask...
so much paralysis in my answer.
And we're going to make Mary go first.
No, of course.
So Mary goes first now because she hates it so much. And lightning round is where I ask a series of questions. And today it is related to our topic, Mary, so you don't have to worry. You've been thinking along these lines. And you've got to answer quick.
All right. And it can't be set a timer every time you ask the question for 5 seconds so that you can't just look at us blankly for 42 seconds.
And if your answers, and then you your answers got to be like a sentence.
Your words do not matter. You just have to say words after 5 seconds.
Just fuck you.
So, yep. That could be an answer.
That's always the right answer.
All right. So one or two sentences. I don't need long novels. Okay.
Okay.
Are you ready for lightning round? Okay.
Yeah.
Ready? Mary, you go first. Eric, you go second. Keith, you go third.
Are we all answering like the same question or is it different? Okay.
Same question. Ready?
This
Mary.
Is long to think
yeah.
About
this
it.
Is called not fair. Welcome to life.
Okay. Mary, are you ready? Eric, yeah, get I'm set ready. The timer.
Oh, I got okay. It right here.
Mary, is struggle a necessary part of the process of finding your own voice?
Yes, 100%. Absolutely.
Eric?
100%.
Keith?
99.9%, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's... I kind of gave you an easy one to tee that up.
Yep.
Yeah, struggle is definitely like part of it. Mary, you ready? Oh, that's a good one. Have you found your artistic voice? Yes and no, or what percent?
I would say, yeah, percentage, probably 60%.
I love having a timer on her. She's really like, she's on it right now.
I don't
she's
love good.
I think for on the whole, from a three-dimensional visual perspective, I think I found my voice.
Okay. Keith?
No, I have not. I think I'm under 50. I think I'm just starting to find.
I think I have been finding it, but I'm probably at about 40 or 50%. All right. Third, Mary, is it important or not to find your artistic voice?
Depends on what you're looking to be as like an artist. So yes and no.
Is it important? I would agree with Mary. Is it a thing that you aspire to? Because there is also value, and I don't want to degrade people who just enjoy building things to give their lives enjoyment in their off time. That's totally fine. So important, entirely dependent on your perspective and goal.
Keith?
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement. It does not have to be if you're just building furniture, you have a line of furniture that you're just building to make a living and you want to go home, punch out and go home at the end of the day. It's not important.
Okay. For me, it was very important for me personally, but to others, hey man, you do you.
Mm-hmm.
Live your life, playboy.
All right. So that concludes our lightning round. Mary, you're off the hook. You're off the hot seat.
Relax, buddy. You're fine. You made it through. But not a single timer hit 5 seconds.
All right. All right. So now before we move to our after show, I just want to thank our new patrons this week. Metro Sauper. That's and then second is Waffle Beaver.
Oh, yeah.
Good old Waffle Beaver. And finally, that's a good one. Derek Van.
So many layers and textures on that one.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to go there. Nope. Derek.
Not till the after show.
Keep driving. Yeah.
Derek Van Vliet. We appreciate the three of you joining our Patreon since the last show. I know we're a few weeks delayed, but make no mistakes. Our appreciation is not delayed. It is now and current. So with that, We're going to transition to the after show, which you can be part of if you're a patron. And we decided today that we would let Keith decide what we discuss in the after show. Keith, please do the honors.
Now, this question was posed to me, and I thought it was very good because the answers could be very different between all of us. If you could no longer make woodworking content but still had to be a content creator as a full-time job, what would you focus on?
Is OnlyFans on the table?
It's probably under the table.
I thought you already did that, though.
It
can't be your answer.
Ah, damn it. All right.
There's always room for a second channel.
On that note, thank you, Eric.
You're very welcome.
We're at the 55-minute mark. We will conclude our episode today on finding your own artistic voice. I want to thank you, Keith, very sincerely. The three of us absolutely adore you. We love you. We think you're an amazing maker. Eric?
Keith knows you're about to be mad. I'm not going to say it in public.
Yeah, right, exactly. We're men here.
Paul's dad
we have an image.
He really did. He was like, "You will love Keith. It does not matter."
But I thought you were a tough love, father.
I am, but you know what? At the end of the day, people have to know how you feel about them, Eric. Okay. You little bitch. Yeah.
I tell Keith all the time I love him. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, you want me to show you my DMs from Eric?
Yeah.
We'll tell the whole story.
You know how many dick pics are in those fucking chats?
My wife loves them, so keep them coming.
Okay. No.
That's yeah.
Off the rails. Woo! Okay. Yeah. All right. On that note, thank you, Keith. Seriously, thank you for exploring this topic with us. We enjoyed having your voice in the group, and we look forward to seeing how your journey develops moving forward, because all three of us are definitely invested in you as a person and as a woodworker and designer. So with that,
thank you.
We'll say bye, everyone. Oh, yeah, you're very welcome.
Later, bye, friends.
Bye.